We are now very pleased to be joined by Jill Del Signor, head of ETF distribution with J.P. Morgan's asset management business. J.P. Morgan currently offers 34 ETFs with nearly $21 billion in assets, and their ETF business really took off last year. About 16 of that $21 billion came in during 2018. They actually finished in the top four of ETF flows overall. And what I think is unique about J.P. Morgan is they offer some of the more plain vanilla exposure through their beta builders lineup, but then they're leveraging extensive resources on the active side as well with their actively managed bond ETFs and various hedge fund strategy ETFs. And then you add to all that, JP Morgan has distribution. They can get their ETFs out through their wealth and portfolio management channels. They're really uniquely positioned in the ETF space. Jill is now joining us via phone from Chicago. Jill, a pleasure having you back on the show.
Nate, thank you so much for having me. I'm going to apologize for my voice in advance. I'm coming down with a bit of a cold, but I'm going to do my best with you this morning. Thanks for having me back on. It was great to meet you in person down in Florida, too.
No, pleasure meeting you in person as well, and hopefully we can make it through this interview.
we'll be good. I haven't talked much this morning yet.
Well, look, before we talk J.P. Morgan ETFs, I did want to ask you, I saw last week Women in ETFs, which is an organization you are co-president of, they rang the opening bell at IEX, the New York Stock Exchange, I think several other exchanges as well, in celebration of International Women's Day and promoting gender equality. If you don't mind, I'd love to hear more about that and perhaps some background on women in ETFs.
Absolutely. It's an organization I am so proud to be able to represent, to lead, and to have been involved since the very beginning. So you mentioned the bell rings. It's something we've done now for 5 years. We started just with what at the time seemed big, but now when you think about the fact that this year we did over 80 bells around the globe, you know, in our first year we did just around 10 to 12 bells. And so we've really grown in an effort to really bring a light onto gender inequality and see what we can do to try to help change that. Now, the organization, you know, like I mentioned, I was one of the original members back. We just celebrated our five-year anniversary. In fact, when you and I ran into one another in Florida, it was right after we were hosting our five-year anniversary breakfast, which we do every year at Inside ETFs, thanks to the partnership of Inside ETFs. And, you know, we originally looked at as a way to connect the industry. You know, some of us that were there at the beginning were involved in other organizations within financial services, whether it was 100 Women in Hedge Funds or, you know, other financial services organizations. But there was nothing that we could find within the ETF industry. And so we got together and started to think, how is there a way that we can kick this off? And so at Inside ETFs, back in 2014, we actually hosted a breakfast with less than 100 women and actually two men at that conference. And now I'm proud to say that membership has crossed nearly 5,000 women and men across the globe. And this year's breakfast last month, which I had the honor of kicking off, had over 400 women and about, I'm sorry, 300 women and about 100 men. So it's been really exciting to see the growth of the organization.
Jill, I'm curious from your perspective, how big of an issue is gender inequality in the asset management and I guess the overall financial services space?
Yeah, so I'll speak more broadly. I came across some statistics in preparation for hosting the IEX Bell on Friday. And there were some stats that were a little bit eye-opening, a lot of eye-opening to me, frankly, and that's that we actually had lost ground last year, dropping 25% in the number of female CEOs that we have at Fortune 500 companies. You know, at this rate, broadly speaking, it won't be for over 100 years that we actually close the gender gap. Another stat that got me was that women have as much access to financial services as men in only 60% of the countries around the world. So we have a lot of work to do. But if we take a light and we shine it on the ETF industry specifically, which is what we're doing within women in ETFs, we actually do see a significant number of women in leadership roles within our specific industry. If you think about it, as the industry has grown over the last decade, two decades, there have been women that have come in and been able to grow up with the industry and as a result have been able to take on leadership roles. Myself, as a prime example, as the industry has grown, I have grown with it over the last decade and been able to now be in a leadership role. And it's been exciting to see my peers do the same. But one thing that's interesting and we're trying to address is that one thing we did we did recognize as a gap, despite the women in leadership and broadly in the industry, frankly, within ETFs, there was an underrepresentation of women on panels. At this, I know you moderated down at Inside ETFs. There was a broad underrepresentation on panels and in speaking positions at major industry conferences. So about a year ago, we launched the Speakers Bureau. And so we're working with Inside ETFs, IMN, Morningstar, to try to solve for that. And we have a very, I think, novel goal of getting to a 25% representation by women on panels at these industry conferences by next year, by 2020. So hopefully by the time I see you next year in Florida, we'll have exceeded that goal.
Yeah, what a fantastic organization. If people want to learn more about this or getting involved, where should they go?
Definitely. It's womeninetfs.com, and we have chapters all over the world. Here in the U.S., which I imagine most of your audience is from, we have chapters from the West Coast in San Francisco, Denver, Chicago, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., New York, and Boston.
Our guest is Jill DelSignore, head of ETF distribution with J.P. Morgan's asset management business. All right, Jill, so we're going to look at a couple of J.P. Morgan bond ETFs today. And let's start with the J.P. Morgan Core Plus Bond ETF, ticker symbol JCPB. This just launched at the end of January. It is actively managed. What was the rationale behind launching this ETF? And then tell us what the investment goal is here.
Yeah, so one of the key tenets, if we sort of take a step back and look from a sort of a 20,000-foot view of J.P. Morgan's product development strategy, I think you did such an excellent job, thank you, on the front end, sort of introducing what we're doing. You know, we've been really proud of the fact that we've been able to build out a lineup that leverages existing J.P. Morgan capabilities, even down to our beta builder suite. We have enormous capability within market cap-weighted beta index management at J.P. Morgan, although most folks don't know that. So we've built it out across equities, fixed income, and alternatives, and then across factor-based, purely active, and purely indexed. And one of the things we're trying to do, and one of the key tenets around that strategy, is to provide choice to ETF investors. And one area where we see and continue to see room for more choice is in fixed income. So if we look at JCPB specifically, it's about how the ag has changed. And we can apply that to some other products in our fixed income lineup, but specifically at JCPB, if you look at the ag, right, I think a lot of folks haven't recognized how the ag has changed. You know, it's a rules-based index, as most of us know, and it's based on the amount of debt an issuer has. So the more indebted the borrower, the higher the weighting they have in the index, very similar to what we see with market cap weighting in equities. Well, with quantitative easing, it's influenced debt issuance and frankly, weakened the ag's risk-return profile, leaving it really concentrated in U.S. Treasuries and, frankly, less diversified across sectors and more sensitive to rising rates. So in conversations with clients, many have been reassessing, you know, how closely they're going to tie themselves to fixed income. How closely they're going to tie their fixed income assets to the ag. And they're really looking to alternatives to loosen those constraints and allow for more flexibility. And so JCPB has been a great solution to that, as has JPSC, which I think we'll talk about shortly. But if you look at JCPB, you know, it's an ETF, actively managed ETF, to your point, that's managed by our GFIC team, so Global Fixed Income Currency and Commodity Team. That is a very broad platform that manages nearly $500 billion in assets. And so we're leveraging that platform, that vertical, that's over almost 300, you know, investment professionals across the world. They manage a similar portfolio that has a 26-year track record. So to be able to take that, leverage that expertise, and bring it into the ETF industry, it's a way that we can show how we're able to bring J.P. Morgan's expertise, proven expertise, into the ETF industry. So it's a way for our investors, our clients, who are looking for a way to look outside of the ag, to combine kind of this research-driven security selection process, bottom-up, if you will, with a top-down macro overlay to give them a very diversified portfolio across sectors, durations, yield curves, et cetera. So we're excited to be able to bring that to the industry. Like you said, it launched at the end of January.
Jill, you mentioned JPST, which is the ultra-short income ETF. This is approaching $6 billion in assets. Yeah. It's been a huge success story. This one, as you mentioned, is also actively managed. Tell us more about that ETF.
Yeah, you know, we are so excited. People talk about, you talked about at the beginning of the podcast, you know, the success we had last year. And I'm so excited that we were able to have that success across the platform, right, in our factor-based products, in active fixed income and in beta builders. And with an active fixed income, it was so driven by JPST. So we raised the fund, launched in May of 2017, so not even 2 years old, and during the course of last year raised over $5 billion in assets. This is a similar story to what I just talked about with JCPB, leveraging an existing vertical at JP Morgan. So we have a $600 billion global liquidity team, and we were able to leverage them to manage this portfolio. If you look in the industry, a lot of folks are using a kind of a bond team to come down the curve and manage these ultra-short products. We instead are taking a global liquidity team and having them come out a little bit to manage this portfolio. So it's been an incredibly exciting story for us, particularly as our clients, anecdotally in conversations, are saying they want to look at options to bring in duration. And so it's been a terrific solution for all sorts of investors. As you can appreciate, Nate, you know, products start off and you sort of have the retail audience that are buying them, and then they start to get size, and then they become very interesting to institutions. And that's exactly what we've seen with JPST, where it started off as a retail solution, and it remains a huge retail solution, but we've had more and more institutional investors come into the product as well, which is exciting for us and has continued to accelerate the growth.
Jill, as I know you're well aware, for better or worse, we continue to see this active versus passive debate continue to rage on, right? And the track record for active, I would say, hasn't been great on the equity side. It has been better in fixed income. Any additional thoughts here for an investor trying to decide between active and passive strategies in their bond portfolios? You mentioned some of the potential limitations of the ag, but any further thoughts on active versus passive?
Yeah, I think for us, it's not about active or passive. It's about active and passive, right? And what is that client trying to achieve? I think there's options across the spectrum. But if we were to look at active fixed income in the ETF wrapper specifically, I think to your point, we haven't seen as much success, I think primarily due to lack of product, right, in active equity. And that landscape could change, you know, over the course of time. But right now, if you look at the landscape of the active management in fixed income, we've seen strong demand for active management in fixed income because it's been shown in a lot of cases that managers can outperform. There's over $3 trillion in active strategies across ETFs and mutual funds. Obviously, the bulk of that is in mutual funds. There's $1.2 trillion in passive or debtor-weighted, you know, the ag, if you will, debtor-weighted equity, or I'm sorry, fixed income indexes. And ETFs have been the beneficiary of the bulk of those passive flows, primarily because of the limited active options. And so that's changing. And even if you just point to last year at the success that we've seen across active ETFs, obviously JPST contributing meaningfully to that, I think we're going to continue to see that as we see more and more product come into that space, because investors have been telling us via their flows that they do like active management and fixed income. There's just been a lack of choice. So we kind of go back to the beginning where we started, and I said we're looking to really fill white space where we see opportunity to provide more choice.
And putting the active versus passive debate aside, what do you think are some of the most important considerations right now for investors in terms of managing their bond portfolio, just as you look at the overall bond environment right now?
Yeah. So we actually, in an effort to help advisors have a really simple framework to how to think about fixed income portfolio construction, because we know it can be really challenging, especially in environments like this one. We worked years ago to create a simple framework for fixed income portfolio construction. We call it the fixed income triangle, and it really has three parts. You have the core strategies, which, you know, kind of give you duration exposure and help insulate a portfolio from equity pullbacks. Think about in the context of this conversation, JCPB. We have the core complement strategies, so those are designed to mitigate inflation risk. Think JPST in this conversation. And then extended sector strategies, and we didn't talk about any in the course of our conversation yet today, but that's strategies that are reaching for more total return. Think high yield, emerging market debt. In the case of JP Morgan, we have our Global Bond Opportunity Fund as example. And so we work with clients to really understand, based on what they're trying to achieve for their clients, what they should be investing in across all of those pieces of the triangle so that they can overweight or underweight really what they're trying to do in a portfolio. And taking it a step further, we actually have a team here at the firm called our Portfolio Insights Team. And we work, whether it's just on fixed income portfolios or broadly an entire portfolio for advisors, to to take a look and do a diagnostic of their portfolio to say, all right, you're overweighted to high yield, or you're overweighted, in the case of equities, you're overweighted to the quality factor or the momentum factor, and what would happen if we were to add this ETF or that fund. And so it really allows us to have a robust discussion with our clients about what's going to be the best portfolio for them and what they're trying to build for their clients.
All right, Jill, we have about 2 minutes left, and switching gears a bit, I have to ask you, and you probably know this is coming, but tomorrow J.P. Morgan is launching the Beta Builders U.S. Equity ETF, ticker symbol BBUS. This will be the lowest cost ETF on the market, 2 basis points. Now, there had been some speculation this could be launched with a zero fee, and I know you can't comment on this until after the launch, but I guess I'd just love to hear your thoughts on the overall fee landscape right now. We continue to see ETF fee cuts. We did see filings for zero fee ETFs after waivers from another provider. That was a couple of weeks ago. We're seeing more commission-free ETF trading. How do you view all this from your perch?
Absolutely. So, you know, fee pressure continues in our industry, right? They continue to get driven down. Clearly, we are bringing products to market that are lower cost, we believe competitively priced for the exposure that they're providing. And that's not exclusive to the beta builders, right? We have single factors that are offered at 12 basis points and JPST at 18. So we certainly understand that fees matter to our clients. And at the end of the day, lower fees translate to better outcomes for our clients. And so we understand that providing inexpensive building blocks, whether that's beta builders or JPST, the single factors, you know, a whole suite of products across our lineup, are important, and we want to continue to try to meet that client demand. So to your point, you know, I'm not involved in pricing decisions, and you can't speak prior to the fund being launched, so I can't really comment on how we end up there. But I do know that we're incredibly excited to be able to provide these types of exposures to our clients at very competitive costs.
Well, Jill, with that, we'll have to leave it there. Always a pleasure. Really appreciated your time today. Thank you.
Absolutely, Nate. Thank you so much.
That was Jill Delsignor, head of ETF distribution with J.P. Morgan's asset management business. And you can learn more about the entire J.P. Morgan ETF lineup by visiting jpmorgan.com/ETFs.